Blog Talk Radio.
Today is January 1st. Yesterday is December 31st. You cannot change the past. You can only remember it. You cannot live in the future. You can only imagine it. Live in the moment, for that is all you really have. God didn't promise you tomorrow. This message is in memory of Ray Pelletier, who ran out of tomorrows on May 21st, 2005. Ray developed a January 1st attitude. As a motivational speaker, he would encourage his audience to do the same. Whenever you are down, he would say, tell yourself, today is January 1st. Today is the beginning of a new year. Today is the day.
And I have a very simple philosophy. I believe that every single day of my life is January 1st. Moses got the Ten Commandments. I got the gift of January 1st. Now I call anything that happened in my life yesterday, good or bad, I call that December 31st. And God promised none of us a tomorrow.
Remember when I was young, so used, time stood still. Love was all we knew. Remember when?
My priorities are simple. It's spiritual first, family second, business third. I want to make sure that I live to those. So in order to do that, you have to remind yourself of those.
Remember when?
I believe the best thing about falling flat on your face is you get a chance to get up, dust off, and keep on going. Let me start all over again. It's January 1st.
Life and curves. There was joy. There was hurt. Remember when?
Not like you've ever crashed and burned in.
Tons and tons and tons. I have more experience in my life at failing than do I do at winning.
Remember when?
But that's a great launching pad. I believe every single person listening to us knows what it's like to experience failure. I'm absolutely touched in my life by being blessed to have had the parents that I had. So I'm very appreciative to my parents for setting and establishing a legacy in my own family.
Remember when?
We have two magnificent children. Kimberly Faith is 25 years of age and Ray Jr. is 24. We all love each other. The first prayer that I pray in the morning is, Dear God, please let my life catch up to my mouth. The second is that I'll be able to walk my talk. I believe that every day of my life I'm going to meet an angel. I just don't know who the angel is. Perhaps it's a server at a hotel. Perhaps it's somebody that I interact with in my own office. Perhaps it's the printer. I don't know who the angel is. But I know that if I treat every single person as if they're the angel, by the time I get to the end of the day, I'm going to have gotten to the angel.
Remember when 30 seemed so old, now looking back, it's just a stepping stone to where we are, where we've been. Said we'd do it all again, remember when?
Years ago, I heard a preacher say, expect a miracle today. I love that teaching, expect a miracle today. And every day I expect a miracle. I have one life. And I recognize if you look at this life, I've got an option. And if my life's dream and mission, and those people listening to me need to know my vision for my life, is that I want people to say that I touched their life positively. Well, how in the world can I touch your life positively if I've copped out and I'm not positive? To whom much is given, much is required. Today's the day. It's January 1st. I truly believe that our life is God's gift to us. What we make our life is our gift back to God. God bless you, to you and your family.
We won't be sad, we'll be glad for all the life we've had. And we'll remember when. Remember. remember when.
Today is January 1st. Yesterday is December 31st. You cannot change the past. You can only remember it. You cannot live in the future. You can only imagine it. You can only live in the moment, for that is all you really have. God didn't promise you tomorrow. This message is in memory of Ray Pelletier, who ran out of tomorrows on May 21st, 2005. Ray lived with a...
You can't put new wine in old wineskins. He was saying that you cannot have a larger life with restricted attitudes. Will you stretch your faith and vision and get rid of those old negative mindsets that hold you back? You don't have to be bound by the barriers of the past. Start making room in your thinking for what God has in store for you. You must conceive it in your heart and mind before you can receive it. The key is to believe, to let the seeds God is placing in your life to take root so they can grow. Expect God's favor to help you break out of the ruts and rise to new heights. Expect to excel in whatever you do. Remember, with God, all things are possible. So get beyond the barriers of the past and expect God to do great things in your life. The foregoing was taken from the book Scriptures and Meditations for Your Best Life Now by Joel Osteen.
Don't you get downhearted. Don't you cry. Troubles will be over. Oh, Lord, Lord, come over. Better days are coming. By and by.
Do you know how to use a blog, a microblog, online video, Blog Talk Radio, or other Web 2.0 applications? If not, then you need to enroll in the School of Social Marketing. Let the Niche Prof and his friends teach you how to use the Internet more effectively. Check out the SchoolOfSocialMarketing.com. SchoolOfSocialMarketing.com. Enroll today.
Joy shall fill me. shall bow in humble adoration and there proclaim, my God, how great thou art. Then sings my soul, my Savior God, to thee. How great thou art! How great thou art! Then sings my soul, Lord, my Savior God, to thee.
Hi folks, Mick Rizzo with Gray Pelletier, America's business attitude coach, founder and author of the January 1st Permission to Win Philosophies, with another edition of The Winner's Edge, our audio newsletter designed to enlighten, inform, and entertain you. The Winner's Edge, a major educational, professional, in-service training resource for corporate America, created by the Pelletier Group. In this edition, Ray goes one-on-one with W. Mitchell, the man who would not be defeated. Author, speaker, radio talk show host extraordinaire. In an incredible conversation that deals with Mitchell's motorcycle accident that turned him into a human torch, years of rehabilitation and the long road back, then an airplane crash that leaves him paralyzed, and he still manages to triumph as one of America's most sought-after professional speakers and trainers. You think you've had adversity in your life? Listen to Mitchell share with Ray, and you'll discover just how profound his creed, it's not what happens to you, it's what you do about it, could impact your life. So crank up the car stereo, turn up the headphones for one of the best tapes you've ever heard, as the Pelletier Group proudly presents W. Mitchell with Ray Pelletier in this edition of The Winner's Edge. Well, Ray, I'm sure you got a guest here that you'd really like to introduce. Would you please?
Well, I will always remember an experience that I had in my life, and that was going to the White House of the United States of America in Washington, D.C. And the person whom is most responsible for that experience in my life was W. Mitchell. I had the pleasure of serving with him on the board of the National Speakers Association, but he means an awful lot to me in my own life. I write about him in the book, Permission to Win. He's a special, special person, and welcome, Mitchell. Glad you're here.
Ray and Mick, it's my pleasure.
You have shared incredible insight over these years with myself and many of our friends. There's a lot of people listening to us today that really are feeling pretty down on their luck. I mean, there's some people going through reorganization in their companies, and other people are dealing with change, and some people struggling with their marriages. And everybody says, but woe is me, nobody understands, nobody has a clue what it's like to be me. You've faced a challenge or two along the way. What would you say to those people listening to us today that are facing some challenges in their lives?
Ray, I talk to lots of people, and I talk about mental wheelchairs, and I talk about internal scars, and I talk about the prisons that most of us at one point or another build for ourselves. I certainly have, you certainly have, Mick, you certainly have. We find ourselves frequently in a situation, in a spot, sometimes seemingly impossible, sometimes seemingly insurmountable. And there's nobody that I've ever met who hasn't been to that place at least once. And even though we sometimes master it, even though we sometimes feel we've earned our stripes or we've climbed the hill or we've done our time, we sometimes find ourselves back there again. And it's very easy to say, why me? It's very easy to say, oh, wow, life's not fair. I suppose the lessons that I've learned most in my life is, it really, and this is a cliche, but it's true, it doesn't matter how many times you get knocked down. Somebody once told me that Jack Dempsey, the great prize fighter, said that the real test of a champion is the person who gets back up when they know they can't. And I've gotten back up a couple of times in my life, and I suppose that's why I get invited to speak to so many groups, to talk to so many companies, associations, organizations, about taking responsibility for the change that's all around us in our lives. Why I've been known for the phrase, it's not what happens to you, it's what you do about it.
Tell me the first time you got knocked down and where you were before you got knocked down. What was going on in your life?
Well, one of the first big knockdowns in my life, and again, we all have lots of them, but this one was a real big one. I had one of those dream jobs. I was in San Francisco driving a cable car. I was a gripman. I was the guy who drove those little trolley cars up and down the hills of San Francisco, halfway to the stars, as Tony Bennett says. And it was a wonderful opportunity for me. I was on my way to work one day on a brand new motorcycle, just 24 hours old. And at an intersection, I was obviously not thinking about what was about to happen. I maybe was thinking about an airplane ride that I'd taken that morning, where for the first time in my life, I flew a plane by myself. Mm. We all have those moments in our lives when we're dreaming or thinking about some great moment, something wonderful that happened. Maybe I was thinking about going to work in the cable cars and how much fun that was. But I didn't pay attention to a laundry truck that ran through a stop sign, smashed into the bike, knocked it to the ground, and the gas cap popped open, and all the gasoline poured out, and I was burned over almost 65% of my body. And I would have died right there at that intersection in that human bonfire were it not for one person, a car salesman, a guy working in a dealership on the corner that day. I'm sure a guy who woke up that morning not dreaming about saving someone's life. Maybe he was dreaming about selling a car. Maybe he was driving to work that day thinking about bills that he had to pay or relationships that maybe needed to be worked on in his life. But at the moment when everyone else watching that incredible scene was literally paralyzed by fear, he tore a fire extinguisher from a wall and rushed out into the street and extinguished those flames. And he is one of those great demonstrations of what one person can do at the least expected moment to make an incredible difference in someone else's life. And the ambulance came and rushed me to nearby San Francisco General Hospital, where a team was waiting for me. I talk to lots of teams these days, and I talk to groups sometimes and remind them that the team that was in the emergency room that day, the nurses and the doctors and the technicians who were there physically working on me, removing the clothes burned on my body, putting the IVs in my arms, placing the tracheotomy in my throat so that I can continue to breathe. That team was supported by an extended team of clerks and janitors and food service workers and volunteers, a lot of people who are not glorious people, not you don't see them on ER, on television, but they made it possible for the rest of that team to save my life that day. And nearly 2.5 weeks went by after that until I started to wake up and started to realize what had happened to me. And by then the doctors and nurses had decided that maybe, just maybe, I might live after all. And I had to ask myself the question, live for what? What was my fingers were completely gone. Everyone, all or part of, as you both can see, all or part of every one of my fingers completely burned off, my face burned off, my whole body, one giant, unbelievable, painful spot. A plastic surgeon of mine, Mark Gorney, an incredible man, once described what it was like. He was being interviewed by Parade magazine about me, and he was trying to describe what it was like to be burned over 65% of your body. And he said, just imagine if you could, and no one can, 1,000 little knives cutting away at your body all the time. Now, everyone listening to this tape by now is terrified, is horrified by this image, this terrible experience. But you know something that's wonderful about pain, about some of the worst moments of our whole life? And I tell this to young people today, particularly to kids, because I worry so much about teen suicide and worry so much about kids who just don't think life's fair, who don't understand why things are so rough and everything seems like it'll last forever when you're a kid. The miracle of the human brain erases the worst of those memories. So even though I'm describing them to you today, the memories that I remember are two wonderful nurses who took care of me, or friends who came to see me, or people working in the hospital, sometimes people who just cleaned up the hospital, who made an incredible difference in my life, who were there to encourage me, to support me. Pretty amazing.
Mitchell, as you described the process of recuperation, you had a funny anecdote about Dr. Gorney's comments after looking at your driver's license on the reconstruction of your face and your body. Would you convey that to our listeners?
I'd be happy to. It was, again, an amazing experience, a torturous experience. It got to a place where I didn't even think I could take it anymore. And I remember one day the chief of staff coming by my room and me looking up at him and saying, "Doctor, do you think I could just have a day off? Just a break from my..." I wonder whether there's anybody listening to this tape right now who has ever felt that way, that they were just like one day off with all the pressure, all the hassles, all the miseries, all the demands, all the things that aren't working the way they're supposed to work happening. But the doctor sat down by my bed and he said, "You know, we're going to go through every procedure we do for you. You tell me what you want stopped, what you want changed, and I'll order it. I'll write. There'll be no argument. There'll be no discussion. You know best what you really need in your life." And we went through all the procedures, and as you can imagine, I didn't want much changed. I liked being alive. It was important. We found a few little things we could change. But what changed in that moment, as I'm sure both of you I can see already know, and your audience I suspect realizes too, what happened in that moment is that doctor allowed me to take responsibility. That doctor allowed me to make a choice. And in the moment that we recognize that we have the power to choose, as Stephen Covey talks about it, the ability to respond. We have that ability. We can use it as we choose to use it. In that moment, my life changed. And I think other people's will too. And that led to the moment that you asked about. I took a little detour there, Mick, but it led to the moment you asked me about when my plastic surgeon came to see me one day and he wanted to talk to me about my face. He said, "Mitchell, literally, your face has been burned off. What did you look like before the fire? Could you describe yourself?" And I don't know whether you two have ever tried to describe yourself to somebody, and in your audience, I'm sure everybody's thinking to themselves, "How do you describe yourself to somebody?" I remember telling the doctor that I was very handsome. I remember that. In fact, I told him I looked a lot like Tom Cruise, if he could just make me look like Tom Cruise again. But unfortunately, at that moment, Nulon, one of my wonderful nurses, remembered my wallet had survived the fire, and she dug it out of a drawer, and the doctor naturally found the driver's license and took it out, and he looked at it for a moment or two and then looked at me and then took another longer look at the driver's license and then a longer look at me. Now, they don't have mirrors in burn patients' rooms, so I didn't know what I looked like. And finally, he took one last long look at this driver's license, looked up at me and said, "Mitchell, I know we can do better than this." And they did, by the way. I'd like your audience to know that. And you know, you asked that question for a reason. I know that, Mick. That was an incredible turning point for me. That was the first moment that I consciously remember laughing at myself, that I consciously remember choosing, with the help of the doctor, of course, to take the pain, to take the disappointment, to take the loss, to take the unwelcome change, to take all the stuff that had happened to me, and at least for that second, for that moment, laugh about it and recognize, put it in perspective, give it some focus on them. And was it still terrible? Of course it was terrible what had happened. Was it still painful? Of course it was painful. Was there a big, long, long road ahead of me till I was back on my feet again? Of course. But in that moment, if we can just choose to step back sometimes from those prisons that we frequently have built for ourselves, but whoever built it, instead of spending all our time trying to find who's at fault, who's at blame, who's guilty, who's wrong, take responsibility for where we are at that moment. Recognize that we're in charge of us. Can't control all the other events, but we can control us. In that moment, I think a lot of things can happen. I think it was that moment when I began to sow the seeds of the message that I'm so pleased that so many groups invite me to come and share with them, and that's the message that it's not what happens to you. It's what you do about it.
Mitchell, I have an unusual question. You glad it happened?
I have been asked that question, although no one ever has said it exactly that way, which is one more interesting thing about the way Ray Pelletier asks questions, how insightful you are. I would never like to have this happen to me again, nor would I ever like it to happen to anybody else on the planet, as if we can control those things. I would never like to have the pain and the discomfort, the fear, and all the rest of the things I experienced again. But if you asked me whether you could go right now, you could change me back to the way I looked with my regular fingers and my regular face and all the rest of it. And I would have to give up everything I learned from that experience. I would say, no, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
It is. In fact, watching you is magic. As I watch you in the halls, and I've seen you so many times now, and I've watched you and admired you. And the last time that took place was coming here to the room to record now and being on the elevator and having somebody come in and instantly recognizing that you could make a difference in their life and how easy it is for you to put people at ease. And yet I'm sure it's almost like I can remember the very first time I saw you. And the very first time I saw you, I felt like, oh, that poor guy. And then that was the last time I ever felt that way. And ever since then, oh, there's that guy. And then there's my buddy. And there's Mitchell. And so it's been a transformation of a friendship and watching something develop. I've seen you in board meetings, and I've seen you present, and I've seen you in the halls, and I've seen you when you're frustrated. I mean, there's been a time or two that I've seen where you can get frustrated, and people listening to us can get frustrated. And yet I've always seen everything you've ever handled, always doing it with class, but always being others-focused.
I get the question sometimes, Ray, that people say, well, don't you ever have a bad day, Mitchell? And I say, no, as a matter of fact, I don't. I only have bad half days. Sometimes I only have bad hours.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that. You're allowed. It's not in a rule book. Go back and check your rule book if you're not sure of this one. There's nowhere in the rule book that says the bad day has to start at 12:01 a.m. and can't end until 11:59 p.m. We all have moments that we can't control or don't control. We all have moments at which we could do better. But those are only moments, and how long we choose to allow those moments to continue. People who walk around carrying that big sign, I'm having a bad day, you will get a lot of people to help you.
Yep.
A lot of people will be there and say, come on, let me help you have a bad day. And I think my gift isn't that I've learned it all and I've figured it all out and I'm a master of everything, everything's perfect in my life. My gift is that I recognize who's in charge of Mitchell. And when I find myself at a less resourceful point, when I find myself not being as thoughtful or as generous or as kind or as understanding or as aware as I may be, I know I can get back to that maximum state, to that best place or better place. And that's all any of us are doing in all of our lives. Nobody, there's no such thing as a golfer who hits nothing but holes in one or even hits par on every single golf course he ever plays. I don't care whether your name is Tiger Woods or whether you're Joe Schmo. There is Michael Jordan does not have every game where he gets the highest number of points. None of us are always exceptional, but all of us have the ability to take another look at the game and coach ourselves a little bit. And if we're really fortunate, to choose to invest in our brain. It's fascinating how much we invest in our wardrobe.
Mm-hmm.
I like, as you can see, very nice mm-hmm. neckties and very nice suit, and my shoes are quite nice. I had them shine today.
Mm-hmm.
I spent $6 to have my shoes shined
yep.
today, by the way, and my shoes are very attractive.
Mm-hmm.
But what did we spend today to feed our brain? We buy the best scotch, some of us, the best cigars. I'm not recommending either of those as the best thing for your body. We buy the best steaks or the best vegetables if we're really trying to take care of ourselves, the healthiest foods. But what did we invest yesterday or today in our brain? Now, the people listening to this tape are investing a lot right now because they're recognizing that it doesn't matter how clean you got yesterday, you have to take a bath today.
Amen.
And they're recognizing that the best way to get to the greatest maximum mental state, performance state, is to get a coach,
mm-hmm.
is to get somebody to help you, is to get an advisor along the way to come in there and say, hey, come on, you did that really well. They shot that basket really well. You hit that golf ball really well. Now here, think about this again. I know we talked about this last week, but that was last week. Let's talk about it again, and let's work on that. That's how champions become champions.
I had the opportunity of having dinner with Lou Holtz and Harvey McKay after he spoke at a convention, and in the meeting, they challenged him to say, do you really have a coach for speaking? And Harvey McKay said, no, I really have 14 coaches. I have a coach that coaches me in running. I have coaches that coach me in speech and every aspect. There's a lot of people that just have to get to that point where they're coachable, though. And I think that's what makes a difference.
I watch everyone, I think, is aware of Anthony Robbins, Tony Robbins, and a fellow who has a lot of visibility. And the first thing that really impressed me about Tony, when I first got to know him, and he's invited me to come and do programs with him, and we were at a little thing together, and I figured he's a guy who knew everything, and he'd been everywhere, and he'd learned it all. And we were in the back of it was an outdoor tent up in Aspen, and we were in the back of the tent, and I started to talk to him about something. The next speaker was going to speak, and I was asking him a couple questions, and he put his hand on my knee, and he said, "Mitchell, I want to answer that question, but could we just hold off for a little while? I really want to hear what this speaker has to say." And then, for the next hour, he wrote notes copiously, writing down the important things that speaker had to say. And how many of us, again, take the time to really invest in ourselves in a whole bunch of different ways? And, of course, you are the coach, Ray Pelletier, so naturally I'm talking to the choir here. But the fact is that it's interesting. And, again, the people listening to this tape are the people who know it the best, benefiting from it the most. And who are they going to give this tape to next to help that person take the same mental step that they've chosen to take?
Could you kind of go back into your memory bank and think of about maybe two or three different situations where you've encountered somebody and it's been a magical moment? Yeah, I can think of kids in our youth program that have been touched by you in such an impacting way that you've touched their life. But as you go back into your own mind, give us a couple of examples of how what some would appear to be a handicap has changed lives.
Well, the biggest fee I've ever been paid for speaking, and I've been taken to Mauritius in the Indian Ocean. That's in the Southern Hemisphere, for people who don't know where it is. I did not, never heard the name before, let alone knew where it was, when somebody invited me to come and speak there. We're in San Francisco right now having this visit together, and if you were to put a pin through the globe and it came out at the furthest most point from San Francisco, that would be Mauritius. Mm. So I was invited to go to Mauritius to speak there, so they paid me a lot of money. Just the airfare was a first-class airfare. It was a giant amount of money to go. But the biggest fee I've ever collected in my life was from a 13-year-old boy. I work at a boys' ranch in Colorado. I do some stuff for the Griffith Center. And these are kids who've been beaten up, been abused, who've been mistreated, abandoned. Just unimaginable things have happened in their lives. And they're at this boys' ranch is really a last resort, because the only other place for them is some kind of a correctional facility, a jail or something. I was asked to go there and speak, and I didn't want to go, because I didn't know what I was going to say to these kids and what good was it going to do. And plus, I wasn't even going to get paid. Now, I thought that getting paid was a very important measure in what you do in life. That's how you count, right? That's how you know you're successful. You get paid. And so I went, and it was far out of Denver. I had to drive this distance, and I didn't want to go, and I was going to get lost, and I had all these negative thoughts. Every negative thought you could imagine as I drove down there. And finally got there and got out of the car and was immediately surrounded by all these young kids who were so starved for affection and who looked at me, and I realized in that moment they saw somebody else who had been hurt. They saw somebody else who had experienced a prison, and they saw somebody else who knew what pain was all about. And I went in, and I talked to these kids in a little barn kind of place they had out there, and I talked to all these kids, and at the end of the talk, a 13-year-old came up to me to give me the biggest paycheck I've ever received in my life. He said, "Mr. Mitchell, I've listened to what you've said today. I've tried to commit suicide 3 times. And before I ever let anything bad happen to me again, I'm going to remember what you told me today." Mm-hmm. Biggest payday I've ever had. Mm-hmm. And I came to teach, but I left having learned from this gorgeous, beautiful 13-year-old child who'd been so terribly abused. And if I helped him even a little bit, even given him just a tiny little key, a tiny little tool, a tiny little skill that he might use the next time he found himself in one of those prisons.
Who's been your very best coach?
Oh, I've had so many wonderful people in my life. My stepfather, Luke Mitchell, whose name I took, he died of cancer when I was 17, and I joined the Marines and then worked as a broadcaster, as Mick and I were talking about earlier. worked as a broadcaster in Hawaii and started using the name Mitchell as a radio name, and I thought to myself, every time I get called Mitchell, and that's why I just like to be called Mitchell. My name is W. Mitchell, as you know, and there's no period after the W. W doesn't stand for anything. I like to be called Mitchell. I suppose I could have made it a lot easier if I just called myself Mitchell, but anyway, I like to be called Mitchell because every time somebody says Mitchell, it makes me think of Luke Mitchell, my wonderful stepfather's just a glorious man, lovely
what
man.
What was special about him?
Well, he was just gracious. He was kind. He was thoughtful. He was appreciative. He was fun. He liked life. He cared about other people.
Give me a hero through your struggles physically as you were going through all these challenges, of which we're still one to mention.
Well, again, I had two nurses that were just amazing. June Fulbright, I mentioned Nulon earlier, Nulon Shaw, who literally picked me up when I fell down. They were there for me. They were everything to me. They were much more than nurses. They were psychiatrists. They were helpers. They were protectors. They were caregivers. They were everything to me. They were really wonderful. A woman named Beatrice, who's my mom, my adopted mom. I've adopted her. She was my sweetheart. So I had a life partner, a mate named Rita in those days. And this was Rita's mom. And when I got out of the hospital, Beatrice wanted me to come home, made me come home, insisted I didn't have any other place to go. I couldn't do anything for myself. My hands were completely useless. They were so sensitive from the skin grafts, I couldn't touch anything. And so I had to be fed, bathed, taken to the bathroom, everything. I could literally do nothing for myself. And Beatrice is one of those people that is just a woman of Mexican ancestry who does not have a great formal education, although she's a very intelligent woman who knows lots of things, but didn't go on past high school. And she's one of the gifts on the planet. A lot of people along the way, a lot of people. The janitor at General Hospital in San Francisco, County Hospital. He didn't have a big important job, didn't have titles behind his name, didn't get paid a big salary, and he would come by my room sometimes when he wasn't even working on my floor just to stick his head in long enough to say, "Hey man, how you doing? How's it going, Mitchell? Hang in there, man. Come on, Mitchell, don't give up." You see, Joe Williams, that was his name. Joe didn't have all the things I just described, title, job, big money, but he was part of a team. I remember Marshall McLuhan, the Canadian professor who people from another generation may remember. And Marshall McLuhan said, "There are no passengers on spaceship Earth. We are all crew." That is another indelible message in my brain.
Mitchell, as you go through this long recuperation process, you hit a benchmark in your life and in the story about getting back in the airplane for the first time, and I'd like you to relate the flight instructor at the Hayward Airport story for...
Well, as I said to you earlier, I had finished my first solo flight the day I was burned, that morning, and so I had gotten far enough in flying that I could fly the plane by myself, but still, no one would describe a student pilot who had just soloed for the first time as being a great, competent, masterful pilot. And so it was, as I said, with my hands, months and months, although I was taking flight training almost immediately when I got out of the hospital. I went back to ground school. I asked my girlfriend to drive me, and we would go to the airport and take the classes at night. She'd have to turn the pages for me and do the whole thing. I couldn't touch anything. As soon as I could, I got back in the airplane with the flight instructor, who had been my instructor before, and we flew. And again, at first, it was very hard because I could barely touch things, and then as my hands became less and less sensitive, I could do more and more. And finally, I got to be pretty good again, and flying is sort of like riding a bicycle. You don't really forget how to do it, although you certainly need to stay current and stay up on it. And so we'd fly, and we'd finish the flight, and it got to a place where he really wasn't doing anything anymore. He was just sitting there beside me with his arms folded, and I did the whole flight. I pre-flighted. I turned all the knobs. I pulled all the things that you had to pull, the throttle and the brakes and all those things. And so one day I remember getting out of the plane, and I said, "Well, now, don't you think it's about time that I'm going to solo again? I'm doing this." He said, "Oh, well, we'll get to that. That'll take some time." And five or six more flights, and I would ask him at the end of each flight, "Well, we're getting closer. Is there something that I'm missing that you're telling me to do that I'm not doing well enough?" He said, "Oh, well, that's all right. We'll get to it." And finally, one day, I really confronted him, and I said, "I think it's time, don't you? Or at least tell me what I'm deficient in that I need to get better at till I solo again." And he said, "Well, I don't know. I can't make that decision. I'm not able to make that decision. We have to ask somebody." And he went inside the hangar and picked up the phone and called the FAA. He called somebody who was only a few miles away, but it was a telephone line, and called the guy down there, and he said, well, I got this guy here, and I want you to help me with this problem, and he's in this fire, and he's a mess. You ought to see him. He's a mess. He doesn't have any fingers in his face. You ought to see his face. It's terrible. He's been burned, and nothing. He wasn't very nice to me. He was standing right there, and we kept going on. The guy from the FAA, finally having listened to it for a long time, said, well, okay, what's the problem with his flying? And he said, well, it's not the problem with his flying, but you ought to see his hands. If you saw his hands, you'd know what I was talking about. He said, well, so what you want to know is whether he's able to solo. Is that what you're asking me? And the guy said, yeah, that's what I want to know. And he said, well, can he fly the plane? He said, oh, yeah, he flies the plane. He said, well, what can he do? Well, he does everything. Well, then why are you calling? We ought to see his hands. That's what I'm telling you. And the fellow at the other end finally said to him, he said, look, Fowl, I can't see his hands. Only you can see his hands. Either he can fly the airplane or he can't fly the airplane. That's the test, not whether he wins a beauty contest. The next day, we finished our flying, and I was kind of discouraged and wasn't going to ask him anymore. And he got out of the plane, and I started to get my stuff together to get out. And he said, nah, take it around the patch. And he said, don't wreck it. This is the only one I have.
What'd you feel like?
Again, one of those incredible moments when you've been down and a lot has gone against you and life's been pretty tough. And all of a sudden, somebody says, yeah, you can do it. You've done it before. There's no reason you can't do it again. And then you get that moment in which you actually accomplish that thing again. We all have those moments in our lives, and it's so important for us. We remember, it's so easy to remember what we didn't do right, what isn't fair, what was so tough, what the last harsh word that someone said. And when we choose, and this was the lesson along those streets of San Francisco that I finally got, when finally one day a woman passed me, and I didn't want to look at anybody because I was afraid of the questions they were asking with their eyes, but I glanced up at her just for a second, and she looked at me and smiled. Mm. And I smiled back, and both our lives changed.
Uh-huh.
And it was in that moment that I really crystallized the most valuable message I could ever share with anybody. What you focus on in life is what you get back. Now, I know we've all heard that, but you can't be told that too many times. What you think about is who you become. And it's just basic, bottom line, laws of physics. This is truth, as elemental as truth can be. What you focus on in life is what you get back. And when I thought about how wrong I was, how ugly I was, how much I couldn't do, how impossible things were, when the flight instructor kept looking at my hands instead of my ability, that was what was coming back. And at the moment I started to think about the power inside, the moment I started to see a gift that it lives inside each and every one of us, sometimes suffocated, buried by lots of garbage, lots of trash. They talk about garbage in, garbage out as one of the computer phrases. And I tell audiences today when I talk to businesses and groups that, you know, that's true with your brain too. And if you put garbage in, that's what's going to come out. That's why it is so important to invest in yourself, to read a good book. If you don't buy tapes. Don't buy books. Go to the library and borrow them from the library. Don't just spend all your money if you can't afford it right now. But invest in your mind.
Today is January 1st. Yesterday is December 31st. You cannot change the past. You can only remember it. You cannot live in the future. You can only imagine it. Live in the moment, for that is all you really have. God didn't promise you tomorrow. This message is in memory of Ray Pelletier, who ran out of tomorrows on May 21st, 2005. Ray developed a January 1st attitude. As a motivational speaker, he would encourage his audience to do the same. Whenever you are down, he would say, tell yourself, today is January 1st. Today is the beginning of a new year. Today is the day